What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode number 2 of One Man Watchpoint, an Overwatch podcast. This is my podcast. I am Jordan, or Sir Dr. JM. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Sir Dr. JM. The doctor is DR. That's SIRDRJM on Twitter and Instagram. If you follow me there, you'll get a peek into my life on Instagram, and probably not a lot on Twitter. But if I build up a bit of a following there, I'll probably start using it a little more often. Now then, as I mentioned, and as you know, One Man Watchpoint is an Overwatch podcast where we discuss everything going on in the world of Overwatch. Last week was the inaugural episode, where we covered a few things. I was pretty happy with the episode. And I've got one download right now, and that was me. But that's also still pretty cool. It was pretty exciting to see my podcast pop up on Apple Podcasts. On that note, I'm working on getting the podcast other places so I can hopefully reach more people. Right now, it's just Apple Podcasts. And that's actually why our second episode is coming, I believe, it's like a few days after the first episode posted, but it's coming a couple weeks after I recorded the first episode, and that's just because the podcast wasn't approved for submission yet. I should have gotten on that sooner. I procrastinated and did not, but eventually I got it submitted, and it went through a few days later, which happened to be, I think, the Friday before the first weekend of Overwatch League. I've got that sorted out now, and I'm working on other podcast services, but for now, Apple Podcasts is where you'll find me. Just search for One Man Watchpoint. Now then, let's get into the show. Give you a quick rundown of what I'm going to look at today. Firstly, we're going to touch on some news, some interesting things, interesting changes and shakeups that were announced for the game, as well as a few upcoming features that, you know, are just kind of interesting, could be cool. And then we'll get into some ongoings with some teams in the Overwatch League. And then, of course, I'm going to get to probably my favorite part of the show, where I will talk about the Overwatch League and we'll look at a little bit of stuff from the first weekend week. I don't know. They call it week, the first week in on sites and stuff, but really it's on the weekend, so whatever. We'll look at the first week of the Overwatch League, the opening, not super in detail, but I want to talk a little bit about some interesting stuff we saw. I'll talk about a few of the teams a little bit, as well as some big plays and some interesting things. And finally, I think we'll take a look at next week's upcoming games. Those will be on the February 15th and 16th, the weekend of the 15th and 16th. So let's get into it now. First thing I wanted to cover in the news section of our show is the announcement of hero pools. Now, most of the information I'm going to talk about here is pulled from the developer update video on Overwatch's YouTube channel, as well as some of it from the Overwatch League's website, where they also posted a little blurb about the stuff that was announced in the video. One thing I will say I'm not quite certain of, based on what I read, I'll explain a little bit. So essentially what they said was, starting March 7th in competitive play only for season 21, they're going to be introducing hero pools where they lock out certain players, certain characters. So one week you might not be able to play as Reinhardt or May or Mercy or whatever like that. The one thing I'm not certain about is, on the Overwatch League post, they were very clear about it being one tank character, one support character, and two damage characters. In the developer update video where Jeff explains it, he actually lists two tank characters. I think he says Sigma and Orisa, and then he says May, and I can't remember who he says for support. But he says two tanks, one DPS, and one support, which I found interesting because over on the Overwatch League post, they specifically say one tank character, one support character, two damage characters. So I'm sure it's probably going to be the same between both. However, that's that's what they announced with Hero Pools. Basically locking out certain characters for play. On the Overwatch League side, they said for that weekend of play. And then in regular play, I believe they said for it'll basically be a week at a time in the competitive play. And then it'll cycle through. So on the Overwatch League post, they outlined a little bit more detail about what exactly Hero Pools look like. I'm not sure, again, if all of this applies to competitive play or not, but regardless, I'll go over it because I would suspect it's going to be pretty similar with the regular competitive season and Overwatch League, because it seems a little odd that the Overwatch League would kind of do their own thing. I understand they, you know, might tweak things a little bit to be more suited for them, but I would imagine it'll be pretty similar. So just pulling some details from their post on their website. We've got randomly selected from a group of eligible heroes based on play rate data from the previous 2 weeks in Overwatch League matches. So what that says to me is they're going to be looking at data collected from the matches that shows which characters have been either played a lot, maybe ignored, maybe... I don't know, I'm just guessing here, but it just says play rate data. So I think that mostly suggests it's going to be, okay, literally every round somebody played Doomfist on both teams for every game. Okay, this week Doomfist is unplayable. I would almost hope that they look at it a little deeper than that. Maybe they look at things like, okay, you know, people always went to, this is probably a pretty easy example, Symmetra walked out of spawn, used her teleport just to gain that distance jump, and then they walked right back into spawn, changed off Symmetra. Well, maybe Symmetra's not available now for this week. You know, I'm kind of hoping they look a little bit more at not just play rate, but also sort of how these characters are being played. You know, maybe Moira might be a good example as well, where Moira is often chose, in my opinion. Yes, she's a strong healer, but I think she's also often chosen because she builds up her ult so fast. So, you know, you're not doing a whole lot to get that coalescence ready, and then you can blast the coalescence out and really, you know, clear an area or, you know, push people back, that kind of thing. So that's just me speculating, but my hope is that they kind of look at a little more than just specifically how many people or how often a character is being played, because that could be cool. Now, some of the other details they outline: no hero 2 weeks in a row. So unfortunately that means that, you know, Doomfist isn't going to be blocked out every week. I say unfortunately because I think Doomfist became such a part of the meta, especially towards the end of the last season, that it was basically like every team was playing him. And if you couldn't play him, or didn't have a strong person to play him on your team, then you were fucked, basically. Doomfist is a great example of that, because when you look at a team like San Francisco, they had extremely strong Doomfist play. I believe Sinatra was playing him a lot, where, you know, he would kind of jump in, dish a little damage out, and then he would jump out. And a team like the Vancouver Titans, my favorite, obviously, struggled with that a little more because their Doomfist play wasn't as strong. You see like a similar kind of thing with someone like Reaper, where some people, for whatever reason, are just a lot better with Reaper than others. We saw a little bit of that in this past weekend of Overwatch League, with someone like Somensu playing Reaper, who's a pretty strong Reaper, and then other teams just staying away from him because, you know, despite the fact that I think he's pretty all-around good, they just don't have someone who's super strong at playing him. So anyways, no hero 2 weeks in a row. Kind of nice, but kind of sucks as well. I'm a little bit surprised that it's only, at least for the Overwatch League, it's only two damage characters. I almost feel like maybe they could go a little further with it, be a little more drastic, and lock out something like four. You'd get some pretty crazy changes if you did something like that. But regardless, it's, you know, it is what it is. Exciting. A little more info on it. They mentioned specifically on the Overwatch League post, it won't be used for the mid-season tournament, won't be used for play-in, and it also won't be used for playoffs or the grand finals. So, I mean, the big thing about that is I get what they're doing. Am I a fan of it? I guess we'll see once March rolls around, because, as I said, I think at the beginning that it doesn't start until March 7th. But it'll be interesting, because doing it that way, limiting people only during sort of, we'll call it regular season play, but then come playoffs, come grand finals, come mid-season something. I wrote mid-season P-Procs. I'm not sure what I meant by that. Come play-in matches and things like that. They're basically allowing teams to say, okay, you can play all of your strongest characters, or all of your strongest players can play their strongest characters, which could be good, could be bad. Because again, you look at a team like San Francisco, who is just so good on so many different characters, that for a team like them, it's probably not going to be that limiting. The fact that they are forced to play other characters during regular season play will just be interesting to watch and exciting to watch. And you know what, maybe we'll see someone flex on a certain character, but my guess would be come playoffs, come grand finals, come whatever, you'll see San Francisco rolling back to those characters that we know are in the meta, that are super super good and super effective in the meta. Now I'll talk about the meta a little bit more once I get to the Overwatch League section, where I talk specifically more about the Overwatch League, even though this is all kind of about the Overwatch League. But anyways, I'll talk a little bit more about that, because we saw a lot of stuff this weekend, and it was very exciting. Now, a little more details about the hero pools. Specifically in the Overwatch League, teams will be informed approximately 1 week ahead of play. So that's good, because it does give teams, you know, a chance to say, okay, someone who you can't play Reaper this week, we're going to, you know, either put someone else in, or have you brush up your skills with someone else, you know. Hacksaw, you can't play Genji this week, that kind of thing. In the section of the developer update video where Jeff was talking about hero pools specifically, he did also say they're trying this, they're trying it specifically starting March 7th, and he noted that they're hoping to be quite flexible with it, I feel like. The impression I got from him was that they want room. They want to be able to make changes. So he said specifically, you know, they're willing to make changes. Sometimes they might adjust the pool faster, they might adjust it slower. They could look at adjusting it things like every match. Now, I should be clear. He didn't say they're going to do this. He said they're going to see how it goes, and then they could do more with it. And that's when he said they're willing to make changes. You know, they could do it maybe every 2 days the hero pool changes, maybe every 3 weeks the hero pool changes, maybe every round characters are locked out, which is interesting. It's something we've seen actually in some of the arcade modes where they do whatever it is, you know, 3v3 lockout. So, you know, at the beginning of every round, you pick, you know, it's 3v3 obviously, so you pick your character, and if your team wins the next round, you cannot play any of those three characters you or your teammates picked. I always found that kind of interesting. It's kind of an interesting way to say, you know, you have to figure out a different dynamic with your teammates, and you have to kind of build on what you did the first round, and also try not to limit yourself too quickly, because if everyone chooses their, you know, their strongest characters the first round, then the other team and they win, then you're locked out of those characters, and probably the other team is gonna pick their strongest three characters a second time, which maybe they did the first time as well, and now they have the upper hand. So it's interesting. I found it fascinating. I think especially when it comes to the Overwatch League, it will be very interesting, and it'll hopefully force us to see a number of different characters being played. At the same time, I do think that it's not incredibly limiting. Yes, it would have been more limiting during, say, GOATS, where, you know, we constantly saw, I don't know, Reinhardt, D.Va, and Zarya. If Reinhardt had been locked out every round, who would we have had, or for a weekend or whatever? You know, same goes for D.Va or Zarya. If Zarya had been locked out every round, I think we would have seen some interesting stuff, because Zarya was one of those characters that, you know, although she has her bubble, she was playing a little more behind the shield of someone like Reinhardt. So It'll be very, very interesting. Now then, again, same thing kind of goes for, say, the support characters. And again, these I pick out tank and support because there's so few characters in those roles. Obviously, damage, there's a ton, and like I said, you could limit damage probably by maybe four characters and not see much of a change, right? With the other whatever you want to call it, classes, it's a little less limiting, a little more limiting, sorry, if you lock out more than one character. So I think maybe one is the right number. It'll be really interesting to see. It'll be really interesting to watch some high level play where people are locked out of, their favorite characters and things like that. So yeah, I'm excited for that. Now then, one other thing they talked about on that developer update video, and I won't talk too much about this just because it's not the biggest deal of all, but it sounds kind of interesting, and I'm excited for it for one specific reason, is the experimental card. So Jeff mentioned that, when you're at the play screen and you see, quick play, competitive play, arcade, whatever, and you also they're toying with, or they're going to eventually have an experimental card pop up there where it'll be kind of unique testing game modes. And it's interesting because I honestly think this was largely driven by the console players, the console player base, which, as we all know, that's me. Now, I think this because, and Jeff literally says this in his video, it's great for console players because there's no PTR on console. You can't play on a test realm or a test server on console. The PTR is only available on PC, and the two are wildly different. I've talked about this before, well, before in my previous episode, where it's a lot more difficult, at least in my opinion, to play a character like, say, Lucio on console, because you don't have that level of control as you do with a mouse and keyboard. So it's a lot, blah, 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 blah. It's a lot harder to hop along walls and bounce around and everything. Same goes with someone like Genji, where on console, Genji is more difficult, in my opinion, to play because you can't do the 180 turns and the quick retreats that he's known for. Genji's a very squishy player, and it's a lot more difficult to do that snappy, hopping, climbing over a wall, dashing towards someone, slicing through them, throwing some stars, and then double jumping over to a wall and climbing up another wall and getting out of there. The same obviously goes for Doomfist. I think that's why, or that's at least a decent part of why you see so much Doomfist play, or why we saw so much Doomfist play in the Overwatch League last season during the 2-2-2. Because you have this level of control with Doomfist on PC with mouse and keyboard, where you can, hop yourself in, you can crash down, you can charge up a punch, throw it out, and then you can do a 180 turn and use your charge, or use your whatever your uppercut ability to get yourself up and out of a fight. I think you see that a lot less on console because it's harder to do that with the controller. Now, yes, obviously, you can just turn up your sensitivity on the controller and everything like that. I think that brings a whole other host of challenges because then, you have to be a lot more precise with the thumbsticks and everything. But I think the whole point of this is I think the experimental card should be interesting to see on console because we don't have a PTR. Speaking for us console plebs out there, I'm excited for this. I mean, honestly, will I play it too much? Maybe, maybe not. I am mostly playing competitive these days, although I've always enjoyed the arcade modes. I do like free for all. I do like some of the other competitive modes. I like when they have capture the flag and things like that. But we'll see. It'll be interesting. One quick little story I'd like to throw out there about the experimental card kind of style thing, or at least experimental game modes, is I remember, and this is not Overwatch League or Overwatch related, I remember back in the day when the PlayStation 3 launched, and I was big into playing Resistance Fall of Man multiplayer online. Multiplayer shooter, well, multiplayer mode of the shooter. It had a single player mode as well. Great game. I love the Resistance series. Resistance 3 got to be one of the best first person shooters on the PlayStation 3, regardless. Resistance Fall of Man, the first one, I remember playing online, and I remember kind of, getting into the multiplayer, struggling a little bit. It was, standard team deathmatch or capture the flag kind of stuff. But then at some point or another. I think it was probably there the whole time, because honestly, patches and updates didn't come to games all that often at that time, especially not on PlayStation 3, because that was awful. But I remember they had a sort of custom game modes section where you could go in and you could make a custom game mode and say, you know, shotties only or grenades only or whatever. And I remember I always used to, and I don't know why I loved it so much, I always used to play one-hit kills. And I don't know why I loved it so much, but it was just fun. You'd go into the match and, you know, it was whatever it was, 6v6 or 12v12. And you'd, you know, pop up, and as long as you were the first one to pull the trigger, the other person died. And I had a lot of fun with it. Now, maybe that's because I was a little youngling, but I enjoyed it a lot. Now then, that's my story about Resistance. Anyways, back to Overwatch. Just to cover a little bit more of the information that Jeff talked about in the developer update, he also mentioned that one thing they're talking or looking at doing is more frequent balancing updates. I found this really interesting because, I mean, from everything Jeff says, it sounds like this is something they hear or see very often in the community and everything, is people wanting more frequent balancing. So he talked quite a bit about balancing. He said they want to be pretty aggressive about balancing, and this hero pools is a part of that. But I found it really interesting because he said specifically they are, quote, deliberately targeting the meta versus the stability of all players and characters. So that's really interesting because it almost says that, reading between the lines, I would argue it does say that they essentially heard, A, lots of people complaining about GOATs, which I get as a Vancouver Titans fan. I was a fan of GOATs because the Vancouver Titans rocked at it, and from what I understand in the lower leagues as well, maybe the Contenders League, I'm not too sure about the leagues lower than Overwatch League, but from what I understand, the Vancouver Titans were also kind of a group down there, and they largely pioneered GOATs and then showed that it could be a viable strategy, and it kind of became the meta. But I think a lot of people complained about GOATs as the meta because it was largely, you know, shield up, build your ults, and then whoever uses their ults more effectively or whoever makes the first mistake in the standoff kind of thing loses the fight. The team that wins pushes forward, right? Now, I get that and I can see that, but I think that this is kind of a direct reaction to that. I think they basically looked at GOATs because people didn't like that, and they said, you know, we need to make sure that doesn't happen again because it did become very stale. Even though I was happy Vancouver was winning and I was always excited to see them win, it did become quite stale. And it also kind of showed, you know, maybe some teams can't play GOATs but can play other metas very well. Maybe dive comp, things like that. That said, a lot of people also called the Vancouver Titans one tricks because they played GOATs so well, and they said they couldn't play other metas. But, I mean, hey, they still placed second in the league overall, and they defeated a lot of difficult teams, too. Even if you look at this past weekend in the Overwatch League, I think it really showed that, you know, yeah, they were great at GOATs, but they definitely can play other metas, too. I personally was not a fan of the 2-2-2 roll lock Sigma Orisa meta. I found it to be kind of frustrating because you didn't see a lot of variety. And this goes back to the same argument, right? GOATs, you often, like I said earlier, you saw Reinhardt, you saw D.Va, you saw Zarya. In the 2-2-2, you mostly saw Sigma and Orisa as your tanks, right? Often on the damage, you saw Mei and Reaper. Mei because she can essentially slow people down and, you know, dish out the damage. And then Reaper because he can dish out the damage. And if you can time a Death Blossom really well, then hey, you're pretty much all set. And then even on support, you know, you saw support was maybe a little more flexible because Lucio's speed boost is so strong, and as well as his sound barrier. But you saw, generally speaking, I would say Moira and Lucio, or Moira and Baptiste, which Baptiste, who, you know, came in late but really became strong in the meta. I'll talk about him a little bit later as well. Now then, going back to what I was saying, I thought this was very interesting that they were saying they're, you know, deliberately targeting the meta. I think they don't like seeing that, I don't know what to call it, sort of staleness in the meta. I think they want to see more of the characters being played. I mean, hell, they made these characters in the game for a reason. I'm sure they would love to see more of them played and more frequently. And this is something that Jeff talked about in the developer update video as well. He talked about moving people off the meta as frequently as possible. Now, he also specifically mentioned not being afraid to roll back the changes they made. And this goes back to what I was saying, or what Jeff was saying, about more frequent balancing and about them being pretty aggressive with the balancing. It was a good point he made because he said that they're not going to be afraid to roll back changes. So what that says to me is, you know, they might nerf a character. Like, let's just, for example, again, let's say they nerf Doomfist. Maybe they, I don't know, increase the charge time on his punch. Maybe they make it something ridiculous, like, I don't know, a 7-second charge time, right? And then all of a sudden, nobody's playing him because that ability is almost useless at that point, right? That's such a large charge time that you're in trouble. So then maybe they have it like that for a week and they go, oh crap, that was a bad choice. And they roll it back and they make it normal. You know, maybe that's a dramatic example, because obviously a 7-second charge on Doomfist's rocket punch would be ridiculous, but maybe that's the kind of thing they're looking at. Maybe a better example would be saying, you know, they increase his cooldown time on his rocket punch, which it's one of his core abilities. Now, with Doomfist, you often see he's got his abilities and their cooldowns kind of all line up nicely so that you can kind of combo people, which allows him to build up his shield as well, or his armor, whatever you want to call it. So again, I'm getting off track here, but I think it's really interesting the way they talked about going about all of this. So that's essentially all of the, call it, news on that front that I wanted to talk about. That was all in the developer update video, as well as the Overwatch League website's post about the hero pools and things like that. But regardless, just very interesting stuff. Nice to see that they're looking at all these tweaks and things like that. I know a lot of people online I was reading aren't super jacked about the hero pools, but I think it'll be interesting. I don't think it'll be too limiting. Some other news I wanted to talk about. We'll call it news item number, I guess this would be two, because all that stuff is like 1, A, B, and C. So this is coming from .esports.com. Specifically, I pulled an article posted by Liz Richardson, and it's just talking about some of the Overwatch League teams having to cancel their homestand games due to the coronavirus. So I'm actually just going to read directly from Liz Richardson's post there. Quote, 5 total homestand weekends are affected by this cancellation. Shanghai's homestand from February 15th to 16th was to be the first weekend of games held in China. The Hangzhou Spark were set to host games from February 29th to March 1st. The Guangzhou Charge is the organization most affected by this sudden change, with 3 of their 5 total homestands canceled due to the coronavirus. Those homestands would have taken place February 22nd and 23rd, March 14th and 15th, and March 21st and 22nd. The cancellations affect 27 games over the Overwatch League's first few months of play. The Pacific East and Pacific West Division teams will experience the most disruption during this time. The Pacific West Division, which includes the Los Angeles Valiant, Los Angeles Gladiators, San Francisco Shock, Dallas Fuel, and Vancouver Titans, would have spent multiple weeks touring China to play the Pacific East Division. Multiple Overwatch League teams have recently relocated their practice facilities or taken precautions to counteract the quick spread of the coronavirus. Earlier this week, and this article was posted a few weeks ago, so side note, but I'm just reading directly from the article. Earlier this week, the Guangzhou Charge moved their training base to South Korea. They've moved most of the team and are working on expediting visas for Chinese players. The Shanghai Dragons relocated the entire team to South Korea amid concerns of the virus. Since the majority of the team are South Korean nationals, visa issues were less of an obstacle. Earlier today, and again, I don't remember when this was posted, the Chengdu Hunters announced they'd be staying in China despite the threat of the coronavirus. As a fully Chinese team, the availability of visas is likely an issue. The team promised they would be checking players and staff and maintaining safety as best they can. In the announcement, the Overwatch League said it will share more information about, quote, when and where the matches will take place, end quote, at a later date. The league is set to begin February 8th with homestand in Dallas, Texas, and New York City. So a little bit to digest there, but overall, the message is lots of homestands being canceled, which sucks, man. That was kind of the, I feel like the big thing, going into this season of Overwatch League, you know, it was a big change with teams now hosting the weekends, right? I know I personally am still looking at going to Vancouver's homestand, which I believe is in May. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's actually right around my birthday. But I'm, you know, quite excited for that. And I can only imagine if, you know, suddenly Vancouver said, you know, hey, sorry, there's whatever, this crazy virus. We had an earthquake, whatever. We can't have our homestand here. That really sucks. So I definitely feel for, you know, Shanghai fans, Hangzhou fans, Gangzhou fans, as well as I can't remember who the other teams were. I know Chengdu was another one. So, yeah, just really sucks. But hopefully they can find something else. I know I follow Shanghai on Instagram. I follow a few of the teams on Instagram and Twitter and stuff like that. And I know they posted that they're offering full refunds. So hopefully if you bought tickets to one of those games, hopefully you can get a refund. Or at least hopefully they announce some other plan. You know, maybe they host their games out of someone else's facility. You know, South Korea obviously would probably be the most logical one. But anyways, super interesting stuff. Really too bad. But hopefully they can figure something out. And when we talk about, you know, what's coming next week and everything, you'll see how this affects the schedule, because there's a lot less games this coming week, and I'm assuming that's because of the canceled games. Yeah, Shanghai's homestand from February 15th to 16th. So I think looking ahead, there were supposed to be 8 games, just like there were this past weekend, and there's only going to be 4 because Shanghai's just not happening, right? So that's that. Now then, exciting stuff. Let's talk. I know I've talked a lot about Overwatch League already, but hey, I mean, a lot of this information does affect the Overwatch League, and I like the Overwatch League, so that's why we talk so much about it. I want to talk about the start of the Overwatch League Season 3 this past weekend. So, obviously, on Saturday the 8th and Sunday the 9th, we had our first weekend of Overwatch League Season 3, and a few of the highlights. The first thing I want to talk about is the sheer variety in characters being played. Woo! Which was a lot of fun and really awesome to see. After we went through GOATS, where we saw pretty much the same, whatever, 9 to 10 characters being played, and then the 2-2-2 Rolock, where we saw, like I say, probably the same 2 tanks, the same 2 DPS, and the same maybe 3 support characters being played all the time. It was really fun to see a larger variety in the characters, even from teams like San Francisco, where we know they can do the 2-2-2 really well. But I think because of the tweaks and the balances that have happened in the offseason, especially with Sigma and Orisa being nerfed a little bit, I think we saw a lot more variety in the characters being played. Just to touch on a few, on the tank side of things, we saw Reinhardt coming back, which was awesome. I love Reinhardt. I know I talked last week a little bit about Reinhardt as a tank character, and I do really enjoy him. So it was fun. It's just fun to see him swing his hammer and, you know, everyone rally behind him and everything like that, as well as, you know, those crazy charge plays he can make. Like there was one in San Francisco's game against Dallas where Super, as Reinhardt, just charged through. It was on Havana right before the first checkpoint, and he just kind of charged right behind the payload and found Orisa as well as another character, and I think he ended up getting a 4-kill or something like that. It was totally awesome. We're seeing a little bit of a resurgence with D.Va as well, who we didn't see so much in the Sigma and Orisa meta. So that was a lot of fun, because we all know how nice it is to see her eat ults and things like that, especially when you're playing against a Mei and you toss out that Blizzard and Orisa is there to swoop in and just catch it with her defense matrix. That's always fun to see. And then, of course, we also saw, you know, not a ton, but we did see a little bit of Winston play, which was lots of fun. I know I talked last episode as well about how Winston is probably my favorite overall character in the game, and definitely my favorite tank to play. So it was really exciting to see him. Vancouver in particular played a sort of dive comp kind of thing, and, you know, varying degrees of success with the actual dive comp itself, but lots of fun to see Winston back in action. And obviously, with Vancouver's, I'd be loath not to mention, with Vancouver's acquisition of Fisher and his Winston play. Just ton of fun to see him returning to Winston and returning to the Overwatch League after, you know, he retired last season. Although retired, quote unquote, because he was gone for, what, 6 months or something before announcing he was going to Vancouver. Anyway, we also just touch on a few other tanks. We did see Sigma and Orisa a little bit, but I think just in comparison to how much we saw, you know, Reinhardt and D.Va, I think, were probably the most played. But we also saw other teams, not just Vancouver, playing with Winston and a few playing with Sigma and Orisa. So lots of fun to see all that. You know, we've got, like, looking at that right there, that's five tank characters being played. So just a ton of fun to see that. Moving on to DPS. DPS was maybe a little more traditional, pulling from 2-2-2. But that said, we did see a few characters that, even in my last episode, I literally said you don't see McCree played too often, and I think it's because his ult is a little iffy in high-level competitive play. And then we saw, I would say, quite a bit of McCree. There were a few players in particular playing McCree that really rocked him, so that was awesome. Going back around, you know, again, a fair amount of Mei still, a fair amount of Reaper, which, hey, they're both great DPS characters. Mei, with being able to slow other opposing characters, is just can't be overstated, kind of thing, how helpful that is, as well as Reaper's ability to just, you know, dish out damage and then back out and build that ult and drop down from the sky and rain hell, kind of thing. I would also be loath, I know it always comes back to Vancouver, but I would also be loath not to mention Haxall's Genji, because holy crap, was it fun watching Haxall play Genji. And obviously I'm going to shout out when Vancouver was playing the LA Gladiators and Ryu Jeong used his nano boost on Haxall's Genji, and he got that big 5-kill on point B in Hanamura. That was so exciting and so fun to watch. We also saw, you know, a mainstay as well with Hanzo being played a little bit. A little bit of Widowmaker as well. And then we also got to see a little bit of Tracer, which is exciting if you ask me. I know, you know, last season we saw Sinatra on San Francisco hop over to Tracer. Not too often, but every now and then, and just friggin' clean up as Tracer, which was always exciting. So I'm a big fan of seeing high-level Tracer play. And then, you know, again, like I mentioned, referenced before earlier, actually, Symmetra mostly just being used for her teleporting abilities. But we even saw Soldier appear once or twice. I know, I can't remember what team or who it was playing him, but I know he popped up on Anubis towards the end there. It might have been actually, I think it was Dallas against San Francisco. And so, interesting stuff. Exciting, but not, in my opinion, you know, not as exciting as the tank role. However, overall, I think one thing we saw regarding DPS is a much larger reliance on DPS. It really looked like the meta is shaping up to be kind of focused on how much damage your DPS can dole out, which obviously is a relatively large shift from 2-2-2. I think with 2-2-2, we mostly saw, you know, a reliance on shields more than anything, as well as the two tanks with Orisa and Sigma. Sorry about that. You probably just heard my dog shaking in the background, and now she's creeping over here, so you might even hear some weird panting and breathing, but just ignore it. My dog is cute, and her name is Miley, after Miley Cyrus. I think in 2-2-2, you saw a lot of reliance on the shields, with Sigma and Orisa both obviously having large shields, as well as Sigma's mobility with his shield. So it's interesting to see the meta maybe shift a little more to DPS being able to dole out that damage. Obviously, a huge change from GOATS, where you didn't really see a ton of DPS being played even. But regardless, just lots of fun to see a meta sort of carried by DPS. If that's how this meta shapes up, then I think we're in for a really good season of Overwatch League, as well as, you know, competitive play and everything. Moving on to sport, I do find it really interesting how the support meta shifts and changes, because like I said last episode, in 2-2-2, I found once Baptiste came into the picture, if you could play him well, like San Francisco could, Baptiste was a force to be reckoned with. He had a really solid offensive moveset as well as some defensive moves, and he could really, you know, help out in a pinch with his whatever it's called, anti-death range zone thing, drone, that he tosses out. And I was really surprised to see a lot less of Baptiste being played. And I think it's because now that we're not seeing so much of the shield play, and his healing is, you know, based on his range around him, I think you just saw him a lot less more. Wow, that was really good. You saw him a lot less. The characters you did see, I would say probably the most you saw Ana, which kind of goes back to Goats a little bit, and even before her, before that meta. But I enjoy Ana play, especially because she's so, you know, line of sight driven. It's just really interesting to see some high level play of her. And then we saw, I would say, still a fair amount of Moira, a fair amount of Lucio, which is kind of to be expected because, like I say, they're both. Lucio especially is all around good in terms of, you know, his speed boost as well as his healing. And then Moira, because she builds that coalescence just so damn fast, I think we're going to continue to see a lot of her anyways. We did see a few teams playing some Brig. Speaking of Vancouver and maybe one other team, but I could be wrong, could have just been Vancouver. We did see a little bit of Zenyatta. I know Twilight hopped on Zen for a bit, which is always fun because I think, you know, during Goats, Twilight's Zen was just masterclass, so that was always exciting. Now then, the next thing I wanted to talk about when it comes to the first weekend of Overwatch League was a couple of the new team builds. Now, I'm not going to go into every team because that could take a while and not be that interesting, but I do want to kind of talk about a few teams in particular. I'll touch on most of the teams that played, but I want to talk about a few in particular. So Toronto and Paris, exciting stuff. I actually didn't watch the whole match. I caught the beginning of it, and then I had to go somewhere. So I actually saw Paris win the first round and was like, oh, well, Toronto still sucks. And then when I checked back in, I saw Toronto beat them 3-1. And I was like, holy shit, how did that happen? So anyways, I'm going to have to probably start paying attention to Toronto because that's really exciting. London and New York. I do want to touch on London a little bit, because everyone was excited to see how they would do with a largely brand new team. And, I mean, I was reading afterwards, you know, some people are saying, oh, you know, they put up a good fight against New York and that kind of thing. I really wasn't impressed. I didn't see much at all there. I think, you know, again, it's only been the first two games, but I think they've got some work to do. I think they need to gel as a team a lot better, which I think a lot of that comes down to experience, right? I think a lot of their players on the new team are quite a bit junior, and so it'll be interesting to see if they can pull something together, but I was not super impressed. New York, strong, as expected. I think they'll be a real contender this season. And then, again, you know, New York as well, strong against Boston. Boston, I don't know, I don't care too much about them. The two teams that I actually kind of wanted to talk a little bit more in detail about, not Vancouver, even though I'm always down to talk Vancouver, and Vancouver was awesome, and Vancouver won both their games, and I was very excited. Even though the LA Gladiators put up a really solid fight against them. I actually thought the LA Valiant did as well, but not nearly as solid as the LA Gladiators. I remember saying in my previous episode, and thinking as well, farther back even, that it's going to be interesting to see what the LA Gladiators do, because towards the end of the Grand Finals in season 2, they were really shaping up to be something. And I think they proved that against the Vancouver Titans. I know the Titans won 3-2, but I think the Gladiators really gave them a run for their money. A few big pickups that I think they made, Birdring, who, if I'm not mistaken, was actually with, he might have been with London, I could be wrong about that, but I think he was a really good pickup. And then LH Cloudy, actually, in the first couple rounds, I think it was on Nepal when LA was playing Vancouver, I was really impressed with LH Cloudy. I think he did a really fantastic job shutting them down, as well as maybe not taking advantage of, but abusing a little bit Fisher. because I think, you know, Fisher being the new guy in the crowd of Vancouver, I think he, LH Cloudy kind of singled him out, and maybe more of a team effort than anything, but they kind of singled him out and kind of took him down pretty quickly, which was really interesting to see. Now, Fisher is not a rookie, and he can play quite well. I think he just needs to gel a little better with Vancouver, which I think will come in time. The other team I wanted to talk specifically about is the LA Valiant, because I was actually really impressed with a few individual players on their team, even though, you know, Vancouver beat them, I guess, harder, worse, more, to a larger extent than Vancouver beat the Gladiators. So Vancouver beat them 3-0, and they beat Dallas 3-1. So the players I wanted to talk about specifically are KSF, KSP, and McGravy. All of them, I think, if, you know, if I had to single out people that I was impressed with in this first weekend, the three of them were definitely up there. KSF and KSP, I think the two of them playing off each other worked really, really well. And if we continue to see more of KSF and KSP sort of gelling together, and, you know, McGravy being a tank, obviously being able to build and, I guess, I don't know, find a cohesion behind McGravy, I think that they could really be a force to be reckoned with. Honestly, kind of reminded me a little bit of when we saw Corey shine with the Washington Justice, as well as with Team USA last year. Honestly, KSF and KSP together on the same team, I think you've got a really strong combo there. And then, like I say, McGravy in front of them also really, really kind of shone to me. So yeah, that's just a few of the things I wanted to point out about some of the teams that I really enjoyed. Next up, a few of the big plays that happened. I'm not going to talk about every big play or anything like that, but just some exciting stuff. I mean, again, first weekend of Overwatch League, so there was tons of fun stuff. Lots of big plays. Lots of, honestly, I feel like multi-kills that you didn't really see towards the end or in the middle of Season 2 there. Although you did occasionally. I remember Shaxx got a big one on Busan. Just a couple that jumped out to me. Obviously, the number one I want to mention, Vancouver versus the LA Gladiators when Ryu Jihong nano-boosted Haxall. I know I already mentioned this, but oh my god, it was so much fun to watch Haxall playing Genji, and I know they did it more than once, and I honestly am also very much like, every team is going to be on the lookout for that combo now. I mean, if they weren't already, every team is going to be waiting for Haxall to play Genji and shutting him down if Ryu Jihong is also playing Ana and ready to boost him, right? So, whatever. I know I was mentioning McGravy before in the Dallas versus LA game. McGravy got that nice 6-kill with his D.Va bomb on Blizzard World, and that was an awesome one, super exciting. That's the kind of thing that I'm saying, like, I don't really think we saw that towards the end of, or even in the middle of Season 2 last year. Now that we are seeing that kind of thing, I don't necessarily think it's going to be more common. I just think that, you know, with the shift in the meta being a lot more focused on DPS and a lot of different characters being played and a lot less shields being played, or a lot less Orisa and Sigma shield being played, I think we might see a little more of this kind of crazy big, I don't know, shows of strength and multi-kill kind of thing. I know I was watching the highlight on the Overwatch League's website as well, and they listed both of those, but they also listed a couple others. You know, XE with a 4-kill in the London versus Paris game, which was really impressive. XE being maybe new to the team? I could be wrong about that. I don't know. And then they also showed off San Francisco versus Dallas with Super getting that 4-kill. Actually, which I did reference earlier when he charged through as Reinhardt just before the first checkpoint on Havana. So lots of exciting stuff. Really fun to watch that first weekend. And looking forward to next week's games. So speaking of, I'm going to pull that up right here. And let me just close a few tabs. You're going to hear me clicking. And let's hop over to week two. So week two, the Battle of Brotherly Love in Philadelphia, hosted by the Philadelphia Fusion at the Met Philadelphia. Now, as I mentioned, only 4 games, which blows. This is when Shanghai should have been playing. So that would have been really fun to see. And, you know, side note, I follow a lot of the Vancouver Titans on Instagram and Twitter and stuff like that. I saw a lot of them are actually heading to Korea now, which was interesting. But I believe if I jump over, jumping to week 5, I think that's when they play next. They are in Seoul, hosted by Seoul. And I know, obviously, most of the team, if not all, is Korean. So they're obviously heading back there because they don't play again until March 7th, right? Which is, you know, just under a month away. So they're heading over there now, and they'll, you know, be at home until their next game. So anyways, let's get back to this next upcoming week. So upcoming week, we have Saturday, February 15th at 2 p.m., the Florida Mayhem playing the Houston Outlaws. That'll be an interesting one because both teams, as we all know, pretty near the bottom at the end of season 2 there. I'm not expecting a ton out of that, but I am interested in Florida. Florida, in my opinion, one of the best logos in the league, as well as some of the best colors in the league. Florida in particular, I think they started rebuilding, maybe not quite a bit, but partway through last year's season. So I am excited to see what Florida has pulled together. Houston Outlaws, on the other hand, actually, also, I'm a big fan of their symbol as well and their colors. Houston, I'm not such a fan of, though. I do know, Harsha obviously left Vancouver for Houston, which, whatever, fine, traitor. Honestly, I think I'm pulling for Florida in that matchup. Also on Saturday, February 15th, this time at 4 p.m., we have the Washington Justice playing the Philadelphia Fusion. So that'll be exciting because, obviously, it's a Philly home game. So, and, you know, Philly versus Washington has got to be, I mean, I'm not an expert, but has got to be a bit of a rivalry, or the closest thing to a rivalry in this weekend anyways. So that'll be really exciting. Washington was, I think, kind of on the upswing towards the end of last season, but at the same time, not a super high-performing team. That said, I know I already mentioned Corey because I'm a big fan of his, and his performance on the Team USA in the Worlds last year was really exciting to watch, so I'm excited to see him return. Philadelphia, a team that I don't know too much about, and other than, you know, they weren't all that great last year, do I think they made many changes over the offseason or anything that is really going to affect anything? No, I do not. So that is that, and we'll see how they do. Now, on Sunday, February 16th at 2 p.m., we then have the Washington Justice facing off against the Houston Outlaws. Again, I think my money would be on Washington, that matchup. And then Sunday at 4 p.m., we have the Florida Mayhem playing the Philadelphia Fusion. And in that matchup, honestly, again, TBD on Florida. We'll see how they've shaped up. But if I had to pick one, purely knowing nothing other than Florida did a large rebuild and Philadelphia wasn't great last season, I'm going to put my money on Florida because I like them better. So looking at these, you know, my money's on Florida, my money's on Washington, but overall I think the most interesting matches these weekends will probably be the ones that Washington is in, just because, again, like I said, I'm a big fan of Corey, and I think he's a lot of fun to watch. Although, like I said, I'm interested to see what Florida can do. And with that, I think I'll bring this episode to a close. This was episode number 2 of One Man Watchpoint. I am Sir Dr. JM. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at SirDRJM. Please do. Please like, subscribe, share, and all that jazz. If you enjoy my podcast, please share it to others. I would love to get some feedback as well as get some requests and things like that. One thing I wanted to hear from other people about was, you know, what are your thoughts on the hero pools? I think I discussed it quite a bit. I'm interested, that's for sure. And what are your thoughts on the experimental card? You know, is there anything you'd like to see in there? Is there any, you know, I don't know, custom game modes that you've played before because you play on PC and I don't? You know, I'd be interested to hear some of that stuff. I know the mod community is big, and the custom game modes, even just in the regular version, are a lot of fun. So, yeah, I think that's it. So tune in next week, and we'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.